Hey, Ian.
Hey, Robert.
Are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Yes, I'm doing quite well. I'm glad to have you on. How does it feel being the first one on the Have Some Fun podcast?
It's pretty cool. We've worked together with Rabbit Habs for some time now, so it's pretty cool to see you starting your own thing, and I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy as well. And how's the Nosebleeds podcast going for you?
It's been good. We wrapped up episode two last weekend. It's out now in most places that you can find podcasts. Record episode three this weekend at some point. Try to wrap on some of the Stanley Cup final games and some of the other things that are happening in the NHL. So it's been a lot of fun. My buddy Trevor, we went to college together, so it's been cool to just sit down and talk hockey for an hour every week.
All right, that sounds good. I think a good place to start is to talk about the hirings of Joel Bouchard and Dominique Ducharme. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, these are two hires that, I think, you start with Bouchard. I think we've kind of seen that one coming for a while. It's very clear that the Canadians are trying to go in a direction with guys who are experienced dealing with people who aren't experienced. They want to work with guys like Ducharme and like Bouchard who have experience dealing with younger players because this team is headed in a younger direction. It has to be with four second round picks in this year's draft. And some good young players coming up through the pipeline. They need to develop through youth. You look at these guys, been successful in places they've been. Joel Bouchard, he's always been competitive. And I think he said during his post or his press conference when he was hired that as long as there's a scoreboard, he's going to coach to win. And I think you deal with, look at what Sylvain Lefebvre has always thought that development was ahead of scoreboards, was ahead of trying to win games. It's nice to know that we've got a guy in there now who will try to win games, and I think that winning can oftentimes be the best developing tool. I mean, you look at the Edmonton Oilers over the past however many years, up and down that organization, they've been not very successful and the players suffer from that. But I think you get a guy in the AHL who can come in and try to win right away, it's going to have a positive impact throughout the organization.
I agree with that. You're right. We did expect something like that to happen, Joel Bouchard being hired because Marc Bergevin signed TJ Melanchon and Samuel Adams-Moisant to an AHL contract, both of whom have played for Joel Bouchard. And I think this is a positive move, and it's a step in the right direction considering his pedigree. He was the general manager for Canada World Juniors in the 2017 and 2018, which won silver and gold. And given that, he could work with younger players. And another thing that he said that really caught my attention, that it's not 1997 anymore. The game is changing into a faster brand. And I like what he's saying so far.
Yeah, no, he's saying all the right things. It's been interesting to see him come into the organization, and he's already hiring some guys at the AHL level to fill his bench. And then you look at the man that's going to be behind the Canadiens bench next year in Ducharme. He's got experience coaching World Juniors in Canada, which means he's coached Noah Juulsen, he's coached Victor Mete, he's coached
Jonathan Drouin.
He coached exactly. He coached Jonathan Drouin. More importantly, when he was playing center with the Halifax Mooseheads, so maybe he can try to figure out what made him successful then, and try to carry some of that success over to the NHL level. Now, I think it's also important to notice who's not, or who stayed with the Canadiens coaching staff. They did keep two auxiliary players behind the bench, Stefan Waite, who should probably be credited with helping rejuvenate Antti Niemi's season. And Price obviously seems to like him. But at the same time, they also kept Kirk Muller, who I wrote about shortly or a little while ago for Rabbit Habs, and his power play. It always seems to work when he's with Montreal. I didn't look back at the systems that he was using in his former iterations with the Canadiens, but I did look at this year and the things that he's doing well. I mean, you look at he's moving, the players are just skating the puck well on the power play. He's just always been successful. They were back over 20% for the first time since, I believe, 2009. I think that Mark Bergevin is doing a lot of great things with the coaching staff. I don't think that we'll be able to use them as an excuse for the team not doing well as we have in the past. You know, we've always looked at Michel Therrien and blamed him. We've always looked at Sylvain Lefebvre and blamed him for development. And we've looked at JJ on the bench and blamed him for the bad power play. That we're not going to have that anymore. So at this point, it's the players, or you're going to have to shake the whole thing up. So I think Bergeron's put himself in a good spot for, you know, player accountability, as well as trying to get the most out of his players.
Mm-hmm, that's true. I was really happy that Marc Bergevin was able to snap up Dominic Ducharme, considering that he had multiple offers. I think one of the best offers Ducharme was given was the head coach of the Hershey Bears, which is the affiliate of the Washington Capitals. But I think he wanted to jump right into the NHL action. And quite frankly, I think his offensive mind is going to help players like Jonathan Drouin, Alex Galchenyuk. And I wonder about Jonathan Drouin's progression as a center, considering that he played in that position under Dominic Ducharme.
Yeah, and Bergevin just came, you know, recently spoke with NHL.com and said he's not done with keeping Drouin at center. He says it's not optimal to have him there, but he thinks that, you know, maybe more time can do him well. And I think Drouin really turned it on at center towards the end of the year. I mean, you look at his point totals the first six, you know, the first half of the season compared to the last half, he was playing better hockey down the stretch. You have to wonder how healthy he was all season. I'm pretty sure he had hand issues all year. You know, not that that's an excuse, but it helps explain maybe why his totals weren't as good as they were. You know, yeah, I think Ducharme coming in, you know, it has to be seen as a positive for a guy like Drouin. They're trying to make this work for him at center. He's accepted this challenge. He wants it to work. And if the Canadiens can't land a big free agent center or a big center through trade, you know, maybe Drouin stays there for another year.
Yeah, that's true. And even though a lot of people were crapping on Jonathan Drouin's production, all things considering, 46 points as a center, that's like a good second, third center. And he hasn't played in that position since junior. It was only his first year back. And I think I'm willing to give him another go as a center, considering those numbers and the hand issues he had.
Yeah, and he just turned 23. Like, we're not talking about Alex Galchenyuk at this point, who's a bit older. We're talking about a 23-year-old who just turned 23 in March. You know, I'm not ready to close the door on him as a center. I think he could right now is a more effective winger, but I can't imagine. You know, it was my same gripe with Alex Galchenyuk and how when he was at the Sage, they did close the door on him being a center, I believe, a little too early. I don't think they're going to make that mistake with Jonathan Drouin. I think they're going to keep him there. He's going to take his bumps. It's not going to be pretty somehow. Certainly wasn't this year. But I think, you know, you're only helping yourself long-term, which is what the Canadians are probably thinking at this point. They hire a bunch of they're dealing with a bunch of young roster players. They're going to let their young players be young players, I think, which is exciting.
That's true. I don't think they can. They have to play him as center because we don't have anyone else who could play at that role other than maybe Deneau, Jacob De La Rose. I mean, it's kind of our cupboard is bare in terms of high-end players who could play as center. And considering we traded a blue-chip defender and Mikhail Sergachev, we have to make it work. Would you rather have him as, like, a first left wing or a second center?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I think, you know, I truly do believe that this summer, Mark Bergevin is going to acquire a center somehow. I don't know if that means Tavares. I know Zach Vinas of Rabbit Habs. He seems convinced that it's going to be Paul Stastny, who's a little bit older, probably tops out as a low end second center, really, really high end third center, kind of one of those in between guys. You know, there's real rumblings that Montreal could be really interested in Elias Lindholm out of Carolina or Ryan O'Reilly out of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
They've got one trade chip in Max Pacioretty, who, you know, as much as I wouldn't like to see him go, he's a guy that could have some serious value. So, I mean, I think if Bergevin goes another summer without acquiring a top end center, it's not going to look good for him. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to get the axe, because I just don't think that's the case. I think this is a results oriented business. And if he doesn't acquire a center and the Canadians win their division and make the playoffs, there's no way he gets the axe. So, you know, those Twitter polls, you know, what'll happen if Bergevin doesn't get a center this year? Well, the Canadians will play in 2018-19. That's all we know. They're going to play a season and we'll figure it out from there. To me, my greater issue with this roster, I know the center position is a problem, but, you know, you look at, I have real questions about the defense. Assuming Shea Weber is healthy, which I'm going to assume because I'm imagining he's going to take the summer, heal up and be ready to go. Even with that, the left side is pretty barren as far as talent goes. Hopefully Victor Mete can play a full year. But I seriously wonder what's going on with Carl Alsner, what's going to happen there. You've got a bunch of young guys who can come in and play in that role, but I'm curious as to what's going to happen at that position, because after center, it's the biggest need on the team.
Mm-hmm, that's true, and I think Mark Bergevin was filling some depth with that with two signings from the Czech Republic League in Michael Moravcek and David Sklenička, who are similar players to Jakub Jerebek in terms of an offensive-minded defender. But I think he needs to do more in that position because, yes, Mike Riley, he surprised many, but I think at best he's a low top four, high bottom pairing defender. Carl Alsner, he has an Ironman streak, so I don't think he's going to get benched. He needs to play on the bottom pairing, because this season he did not deal with top line, top four pairings quite well. And I think Mark Bergevin has a very busy summer. He needs to get a center. I mean, even though we've been saying that forever, but he also needs to get a really good left defender to play with Shea Weber.
Yeah, I still, you know, and I might be naive in thinking this, I think what it takes to play in that role. He was quite good this season when he was healthy. He wasn't given the chance to play with Shea Weber a whole lot, but I think, you know, I mean, who was playing with him for most of the season? Carl Alsner was up there a lot. Petrie played up there with him for a while. Jeff Petrie had a hell of a season, especially in Shea Weber's absence. I don't think a lot of people are talking about that enough, how dominant he was on the power play, how dominant he was at even strength. I think that bodes well for the Canadians on defense, because they have two really, really strong right-handed defensemen. But you have a whole bunch of question marks back there. And David Schlemko, what is he going to bring? You know, we were promised that he was going to be a really reliable guy. Unfortunately, he spent most of the year injured. We don't really know what we're getting in David Schlemko even still. What can Victor Mete bring? Is Carl Alsner going to have to take a huge step forward? Is that contract going to be, you know, pretty burdensome on the Canadians? Guys like Mike Riley, who I liked Mike Riley when they acquired him, the low acquisition cost. He skates the puck well. So, and, you know, the two Czech prospects that you listed, they just today, I think Cat Friendly released that they have out clauses, not unlike what Jerebek had, in that if he gets sent down to Laval, if they get sent down to Laval, they can opt out of their, you know, out of that, and they'll stay on their contracts, but they won't play here. They'll go back and play in the Czech Republic. So I think Bergevin's trying to create a lot of competition at training camp. He's always done that, whether it's in goal. You know, you remember Mike Conn stole that role from Tokarski just to have it stolen from him the next year with Al Montoya. It could happen again this year. If Lindgren is out and Niemi doesn't look like himself, you know, you could just steal another one there too. I think he's setting himself up to have these competitions in camp. I think Bergeron likes him. And I can't say he's wrong. These players come in and they win spots. That's what you want out of your team. So I think that's what, right now anyway, that's the goal on defense, is to just have someone win their spot. Of course, we have free agency and trades and everything else that can go along with that. But it's definitely going to be an interesting summer. I think we're also setting up for one of the most interesting training camps over the last, you know, 7 years or so. You know, that's Bergeron's tenure. So, you know, I don't think this team will look anything like it does now in September. But at the same time, the parts that we do have now make for an interesting training camp.
Mm-hmm. You also have to question about Jordy Benn. At the beginning, when he was first traded to Montreal Canadiens, he played very well, but this season he did struggle with inconsistency. Do you think he could play as a top four defender, as a plug-in, if Marc Bergevin can't obtain a quality left-handed defender?
You know, ideally, I think he's more of a bottom-pairing guy. I think that's one of the issues that the Canadiens are having right now, is a bunch of bottom-pairing guys. You know, I do think that one of the reasons Ben struggled this year is he was forced to play the right side as a left-handed defenseman. Or I think it was the other way around. I think he was playing the left side as a right-handed defenseman. Either way, he was playing the wrong side, which doesn't bode well for a defensive defenseman. You know, the puck comes around the boards and it's not on your strong side. You have to turn to your backhand to get it. He just looked lost a lot of the time this year. I mean, we saw him make really odd pinches at the blue line. I think his timing was just off from October. It was odd to see, because he was such a reliable defenseman for the Canadiens down the stretch last season into the playoffs, and even against the Rangers in the first round, he played quite well. So it's odd to think that Jordy Benn just collapsed all of a sudden in one season. Bottom pairing guy, yeah, but Montreal has 7 or 8 bottom pairing defensemen and only 2 spots for him. So you know, something's got to give. There's going to be bodies coming in and out of this roster. Don't buy a jersey. I think there's a lot of change to come over the next few months with this team. Defense has to be – there's just too many bodies back there. Once everyone's healthy with prospects coming up, there's too many bodies. You know, guys are going to have to start moving out. So – I would expect that to be one of the top priorities. Maybe leverage some of those into getting some help up front. Filling your pockets with draft picks like you did this year.
I mean, one player who has been mildly linked with the Montreal Canadiens is Slava Voynov, but personally, I wouldn't want him, considering his legal history in America. And even though he would be a good addition, I just don't think Marc Bergevin should take that risk.
No, you know, I don't think there's a place in this league for players, for people like Slava Voynov. You know, what he did wasn't a mistake. It was something that no human should do. And at the same time, it runs contrary to all of Bergevin's beliefs about character, and you know, and being a character hockey player, a character person. These are the people that he wants on his team. I think signing Voynov would completely decimate that in the eyes of a lot of fans. I'll speak for myself. I can't speak for everyone, but I would be, you know, pretty disappointed in this team if they, you know, they preach character, 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 and then they go out and sign someone like this. But, you know, I'm not going to get upset about it now because it hasn't happened. So I think, you know, we should wait to get upset about things, you know, until they happen. I'll leave that there. I don't see it happening, just because I think Bergevin is a smart guy. I don't think he's interested in you know, in just an absolute problem person. So I don't see that as an option for Montreal.
It's good that the Montreal Canadiens have a buttload of draft picks, because if we were speaking right now and they only had 4 draft picks, I wouldn't be very confident if they could find a diamond in the rough. Like a good left-handed defender. I mean, they do have 4 second-round picks, and they need to really capitalize on that. And I believe that Trevor Timmins can do that in finding quality players.
Yeah, no, I think letting Trevor Timmons do his job is probably going to pay off long term for the Canadiens. Now, they've got four of those second round picks this year. If they make all four of them, I'd be surprised. I think that at least one of those, if not two of those, are on the move. There are too many interesting names out there. There are too many holes that could be filled with roster players. You know, I look at, you know, for an idea of what Bergevin might do, I look at what he's done in the past. The last two seasons, he's gone out and traded, last two off seasons rather, he's gone out and traded picks for expiring restricted free agents. Two summers ago, it was Andrew Shaw. They sent two second round picks to Chicago and got Shaw and signed him to a deal within a few days. He did it last year. He went and acquired Jonathan Drouin. Signed him to another contract. I think that there are a lot of teams in tough cap situations that won't be able to sign their players. I look at Tampa Bay, who you look at, if they're looking more towards the future and trying to maintain what they have, in Kucherov sticking around, maybe a guy like JT Miller becomes expendable for them. He's a restricted free agent center, probably a two center in this league, wins a lot of faceoffs, can play both ends of the rink. Can two second round picks get that deal done for him? You know, I like to think moves like that. It's something that Bergevin has been really interested in doing. So yeah, if he picks all four, if he uses all four of his second round picks on actual draft picks, I'll be quite surprised. But again, it wouldn't be a bad thing for the team. Just restocking the cupboard. Taking as many swings as possible. The draft isn't a guarantee. It's not an exact science. So you walk up to the plate four times, you have higher odds of landing one player, two players, than you do with just one pick.
That's a very good point. In that case, it's a win-win situation for Mark Bergevin, because if he doesn't trade any of those second round picks, he could restock the cupboard and address the needs at center and at left defense. But if he could trade those two draft picks for, like you said, JT Miller, or perhaps another cap-tied team in San Jose with Tomáš Hertl, who could be a good player, I think Mark Bergevin has positioned himself well by accumulating as many draft picks as possible to look at every single option possible that he has.
Right, and I think it's time for him to use the cap space that he has as an asset. You mentioned San Jose. They're one of the front runners apparently for John Tavares. But at the same time, they just signed Evander Kane to a 7-year, $7 million deal. They don't have the money that Stamkos need, or not Stamkos, that Tavares would want. So if they were going to go after him, they'd have to make some money available. You know, could you go get a guy like Tomáš Hertl so that they don't have to pay him? You've got cap space. You can facilitate something like this. So it's definitely going to be an interesting summer. I don't think that there's any one fix for the Canadiens. And there's also the fact that Mark Bergevin surprises everyone every summer. He does something that no one saw coming every single summer. To try to predict what he's going to do is an exercise in futility. We can try to extrapolate from what he's done in the past, which is all I've tried to do. At the end of the day, he works in silence. He strikes quickly. And no insiders seem to be in on what he's dealing with. The Canadiens Twitter account is the only one that breaks their own trades. So, you know, I not to say don't trust the insiders. I think that they work hard. They know what they're doing. I just think Mark Bergevin's a different animal when it comes to this sort of thing.
Definitely. He has done something every single year, something surprising. Trading PK Subban for Shea Weber, trading his blue chip prospect in Mikhail Sergachev for Jonathan Drouin. I'm just thinking about what he's going to do this year, because in those seasons, he wasn't against the wall, but in this season, it's make or break for him. If he doesn't get the assets necessary for them to go on a long playoff run, then I'm not sure if he could, if he'll stick around at the end of next season.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a whole season to decide whether that's going to be the case. I think it's it's imperative on him that he has, you know, he's been trying this whole time. People say he's not trying to acquire a center. You know, there was the interview that he gave on TSN 690 at the end of the year where, you know, they mentioned that top centers are available. And, you know, they offered names. And he says, well, how do you know I didn't try to get that person? And he's right. We don't know. We don't know what he's trying to do. We only know what he's able to do. Criticizing a general manager for a deal he doesn't make is, you know, I don't think it gets us anywhere. I think, you know, general managers make enough moves for us to criticize. We don't have to start playing the, well, what if he did this game? I think we just talk ourselves in circles. But I think we're going to have plenty to talk about all summer. I really do. I just have this feeling that he's going to shake the deck and try to start over. We probably start the next season with a new captain, if not no captain. You know, I just think he's not – I think he might be somewhat done with the core of this team, and it's time to shake it up.
That's true. Let's transition from all of this free agent trade talk to things that happened, like the firing of Sylvain Lefebvre from Laval Rocket and J.J. Danio and Daniel Lacroix from the Habs bench. What do you make of those moves?
Well, I'll start with Lefebvre. I'm not a Laval expert. I look at the results that they've had. They haven't been good enough. I think this season, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Canadians were hurt all season, so they were constantly calling up their best players. But, I mean, they tried to stock that roster with talent at the beginning year because they wanted it to be a success in the first year.
Yes.
The likes of like Matt Taramina, who, you know, led the AHL in scoring by a defenseman in the previous year. They tried to make that team a success, and, you know, maybe it all falls on Lefebvre's shoulders. Maybe it doesn't, but in the past, like what's been the excuse in the past? You know, he hasn't been successful. The writing's been on the wall for this guy. It was just a matter of time. I think Bergevin waited to strike. He waited for guys that he wanted to become available, and he made it happen. I think, you know, something has to be said with him moving on from guys like, you know, within the past year and a half, 2 years, he's moved on from his friend in Michel Therrien and his friend in Sylvain Lefebvre, which are things that we've all written about the Canadiens, is that, you know, Marc Bergevin hires his friends and he doesn't move on from them. Well, he's done that a bunch now. You know, at this point, it's just results oriented. We just need to, these guys are going to get a big chance to do something really positive with this roster in JJ's place. I'm excited to see what the penalty kill is going to look like next year, because it was an absolute nightmare all season. It has been quite some time.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe taking that stress off of Carey Price, that he has to be the only penalty killer out there, will be helpful. You know, and of course those responsibilities belong to JJ Daniel. But I think that, you know, this new coaching staff is going to put this roster in the best position to succeed. And we don't even know what the roster is yet. But Mark Bergevin has built the frame. You know, there's been moves in upper management, Rick Dudley leaving and some reorganization in that respect. You know, he's shaking up the front office. I think he's gearing up to do the same with the roster. But he's done well to get his ducks in a row here and make sure that his end is cleaned up before he gets to work and starts moving bodies around.
That's true. And I'm quite excited which coach that Claude Julien will put on his team as a defensive type of coach to replace J.J. Daniel, because as you mentioned, their penalty kill was awful. And I'm really excited for what Claude Julien has in mind. Also, I think it was also long overdue for Sylvain Lefebvre to get fired. And it's kind of disappointing because Marc Bergevin signed a lot of veteran players to play for the Laval Rocket to make it a first successful season, like Byron Fraze, Peter Holland to an extent. Matt Tarmina, like you said, and re-signing Chris Terry. And at the beginning of that season, I was quite excited that that could that they could play well, but unfortunately, it kind of collapsed considering of all the injuries that they've had, the Canadians. So I'm not sure what to make. I don't think that's Daniel's fault per se, but his past record of being unable to bring players to the next level from the AHL to the NHL, it says a lot about his success. Other than Sherbach, Beaulieu, Udon, he hasn't done much to, or he hasn't got that many players to the next level as others would have liked.
Yeah, no, I look at, the guys that you listed, like Byron Fraze, he spent most of the year with the Canadians. You know, it's unfortunate, and sometimes it's not even that they've done anything particularly wrong in Sylvain Lefebvre, or in this case, JJ Daniel. I think it was just time for a change. The fact that this wasn't done right away, and Claude Julien coached the rest of the season in 2014-15. Nope, that wasn't right. 2015-16. He finished that year. That number might still be wrong, but he finished that year with the coaching staff that he inherited from Michel Therrien. He went the full next season with the same coaching staff.
Yes.
It's surprising that that even happened. He tried to make it work with the guys that had already had experience coaching these players. Now they shake the deck. They try something new. I think these have to be your last steps before you completely flip the roster over, right? I mean, you change the voices that are talking to them every day. You change the structure and the system around them. And if that doesn't work, there's only so much you can do as far as coach movement. You're going to have to start reorganizing bodies.
Yes. Overall, I'm quite confident with what Mark Bergevin has done behind the bench, or not behind the bench, but with acquiring Joel Bouchard, Dominique Ducharme, and letting Claude Julien get his own guys. I think there's a lot of hope that those new voices can rejuvenate a Habs roster, and we don't even know who's going to stay with the Habs. Pacioretty might get moved. Anyone could get moved, considering that Marc Bergevin has surprised us for so many years. But I think that with the Habs right now, on paper, if Weber returns to form, or not return to form, no, he was injured. He was injured. If he plays to what he is, 45, 50-point guy, shutdown defender, and if Carey Price returns to his 920 form, which I think he will. I think it was just an off-season for him. Those two players could put them into the playoff conversation, and we haven't even talked about who Marc Bergevin will acquire and trade and whatnot.
Yeah, I think there are too many question marks with this team from the results we saw last year to completely count them out for next season. Of course, it depends on the bodies that they pick up, but you nailed it there when you said, Shea Weber needs to be healthy. If he's healthy, this is a different hockey team. Carey Price had his own stuff going on. He suffered from chronic fatigue, and even when he was just playing, he didn't look like himself. He never did. Price has to rebound. I think he does. I think, to soapbox a little bit about Carey Price, people seem to want to point to the season that he did poorly as a descriptor of what he has been. I don't buy it. You look at sample size, that one season is so insignificant considering his entire body of work. He's constantly a Vezina contender, if not a final nominee. He's a difference maker for this team because guys look at him and they say, "Oh my God, that's Carey Price I'm shooting on." It starts in your head. It's the same idea that you get from playing against Shea Weber. He's not the player he I don't think he could be the player that he was, at least not this last season. He wasn't. Can he get back to that level? Absolutely. But there's something to be said about the fact that players are afraid of Shea Weber, and they're afraid of playing against Carey Price. You know, when those guys are gone, you know, they're almost like psychological enforcers for the Canadians. You know, they when they're not there, other teams can just walk in and make a mockery out of this team. But that should go for every hockey team in the league. If you take away their best defenseman and their number one goalie, what do you have left?
That's true.
You know, I mean, the only team that seems to be able to get over that is the Penguins, and they've got something in the water in Pittsburgh that makes that possible.
Yes.
But I can't imagine a team with a healthy Carey Price, who, like you said, can put up 920 goaltending, and a healthy Shea Weber participating on the power play and on the penalty kill and playing 25 minutes a night. I don't see anyone can say definitively that that team is automatically a write-off for the season. I don't buy it.
That's true. One subpar season doesn't define the career of Carey Price, considering what he's done. In 2014-15, he almost single-handedly carried the Habs to the second round of the playoffs. And same with Shea Weber. Even though he had a nagging injury that he played through for the first third of the season, and he was still on a 50-point pace. And I think both players will rebound. And also, before last season, they were division champions when both of them were healthy. So I think that there's a lot of good to take from this, hoping that Shea Weber and Carey Price will rebound, but there's no reason to think that they won't rebound.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. That's, you know, we can't tell the future. We can only try to prognosticate. We can only try to predict what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, I think the past is the greatest you know, indicator of what's going to happen. I think Carey Price is fine. I think Shea Weber will bounce back. And I think we should leave the results of next season to be decided next season.
Yes, that's true. The last thing I'd like to touch on is the draft. Who do you think that the Montreal Canadiens would draft? Do you think they'll opt out for Jesperi Kotkaniemi, or do you think they'll go for someone like Filip Zadina or Brady Tkachuk?
You know, if I was responsible for the pick, I would select Filip Zadina. I think that he's got the highest ceiling out of the players that will most likely be available. I think that obviously, you know, Dahlin's going to go number one. I think Svechnikov goes number two. I look at the players that are going to be available at three. And I'm not a huge draft sort of guy. I love the draft, but I'm not a prospect expert. But from everything that I've been told, Zadina seems to be the one there that's the complete package. He would be added to a team that's already full of wingers. So, you know, it's not like Montreal's addressing a need there. That's not to say that I don't like Kotkaniemi. I really do. I think that Montreal, some team is going to do very well to pick him in the first round, whether that's at 5 or 10. I think he'll fall somewhere in that range. Who's to say Montreal can pick third and get Zadina and also swing a trade and pick 10? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. You know, I keep throwing the number 10 out there because I believe that's the Edmonton Oilers pick.
Yes.
An absolute madman who would probably trade that for pennies on the dollar.
Yes, that's true.
So I think, you know, I don't think in the draft you pick for team need. I think you're better off just letting the positions fall as they are and just picking the best player available, especially when you pick as high as the Canadians do. You might think that Kotkaniemi can help you down the middle right away, but you have to the value of that pick. And like Bergevin said in an interview with NHL.com just yesterday, you know, you suffer for this pick. You exchange a lot of goodwill with your franchise, with your fan base, to get this pick. That's why he says he's probably not going to trade it unless he gets blown away by an offer. You know, I think he would do well to just pick the best player available, which in my mind is Zadina. Now, people like to throw around the name Brady Tkachuk. I'm not huge on Brady Tkachuk. I think that you're picking him. A lot of people seem to lean towards him because of his intangibles. That's not to say they're not important. Yes, he's a pain in the ass to play against, apparently. Yes, he's got a hard, you know, he's hard-nosed for the net. He's got a big body. He can be an enforcer-ish type and play on a line with Jonathan Drouin. I think dealing with players like Tkachuk, you start to adapt with some, you know, what I like to think of as the Staal tax. You know, why did Mark Staal get the contract he did? I think they paid for the name on the back of the sweater, you know, because of his brothers, Eric and Jordan, paved the way for him. I think people are looking at Brady Tkachuk, and now Brady Tkachuk is probably an excellent hockey player. At the same time, I don't think he's worthy of that third overall pick. I think he'd be to go for pure skill. And I think at that spot, it's got to be Zadina, who has experience playing in a Quebec market. He played for Halifax. He said he would love to come to Montreal. They're the best fans in the NHL. He loves loud buildings. He loves playing with pressure. As far as I'm concerned, he's my guy. And another thing about him that, you know, falls under those intangibles is he's a rink rat. This kid hates leaving the rink. There's a story, you know, the Mooseheads practice got canceled due to a snowstorm. But he wanted to skate so bad that he called his coaches and made him – they came and picked him up at his billet family's house and drove him to the rink so he could skate. The kid hates being away from the rink. You know, he's a Czech player. We've had guys like that. His name was Thomas Plekanec, and he was a fan favorite. You know, Thomas Plekanec hated leaving the rink. He was always the first one there and the last one to leave. I think that, you know, if you want to measure intangibles against each other, I would lean more towards those. Again, Montreal is going to get a quality player with that pick. I'm merely stating my opinion, what I would like to have done. If they pick Kotkaniemi, I'd be a little disappointed, but at the end of the day, Bergeron's trying his best to acquire a center. I can't fault him on that. If he picks, if he picks Tkachuk, he just has a difference of opinion than me. He's a smart guy. You know, I can't fault him on that either. Montreal's going to get at least one quality player out of this NHL draft. And I think that that's something that we should at least be pretty excited about. They'll probably make an instant impact on the roster next season. They're picking that. So the draft should be an interesting time. We just have to wait another month for it to happen.
Unfortunately. And you do raise a good point that Philip Zadina, he seems to like the Montreal Canadiens a lot. And when the Canadiens signed Mrazek and Sklenička, in my mind, I was like, was Mark Bergevin signing those players that make Zadina more comfortable? I don't know. That's just me thinking. But Zadina, I think the Canadians should definitely draft him because they need goals, goals, and more goals. And that's all that Zadina supplies. He has a great shot and he's a great skater. And I think I'm not sure if he could instantly help the Canadians this season, but down the road, like him on the first line and Gallagher on the second line, I think that'd be dynamite for years to come.
Yeah, I think wingers, you know, they're the most easily acquired roster spot. There's just more of them. But it doesn't mean that they have no value. I think you look at what the Canadians are doing on the wing and they're loading up with guys that can score. It's exciting when you look at, you know, Galchenyuk playing the wing now. Gallagher's on the wing. We have Lehkonen, who he had a down year, but I think he's more of what he showed us in his rookie season. Again, he had an injury-riddled season, a lot of back issues. And other guys that can just score. It's exciting. We might have two actual scoring lines next season. Two lines can roll out there.
That's true.
Just scoring goals.
And it kind of relates to the direction because when the Canadians were destined to make the playoffs, when they were knocked out by the Rangers on the trade deadline, they acquired Steve Ott, Andreas Martinsson, and Dwight King, all of whom they don't score a lot. They're not fast. But now you see Mark Bergevin, he's getting players like Nikita Sherbak, Arturi Lehkonen, Charles Houdon, giving them extended minutes, Galchenyuk on the wing, Gallagher. And you're right. I think for the first time in a while, we could have two potent lines who could score on a consistent basis, given that we have Lehkonen, who he had an off year, but I think he's going to rebound since he was injured. We have Houdon, who had 30 points as a rookie, which is pretty good. Sherbak, he's just starting to become a great NHL player, and we already have established players in Galchenyuk and Gallagher who could do wonders.
Yeah, it's definitely it's I think the team up front is in as good a shape as they've been in quite some time. Now they need more bodies up the middle, but you know, you insulate those guys with tons of scoring on the outside. Gallagher just had a 30-goal season, but you know, I forget about Paul Byron all the time. Paul Byron put up 20 goals again.
I forgot about him as well.
Yeah, he's just a guy that slides off my radar, but he's so fast. He's what the NHL is becoming. I mean, could you imagine Paul Byron fitting in on like a team like Vegas? Like that, he would be one lost in the crowd there. He's just so fast. Montreal, you know, they need a guy like him. You know, there's, and you know, guys like Daniel Carr. What's going to happen with Daniel Carr? He's a restricted free agent. There's lots of restricted free agents on this roster.
Philip Deneau, he's
Philip
one.
Deneau, sure. Jakob De La Rose again, who had a great world championships, winning the gold with Sweden. So I mean. Mm-hmm. A lot of, as we've said basically the whole time, and I think what we'll say all summer until some stuff starts to happen, there's just a ton of question marks on this team. Making any sort of prediction about what this team will be next year is an exercise in futility. This isn't the roster you see on the Canadiens website is not what's going to happen next season.
Definitely. That's true. Last 2 years, like I mentioned before, he did trade for big players, and he was under the radar. No one expected that, and that was at the latter part of June. So do you think, I'm just wondering if he's gonna make another big trade a few days before the draft, in between the draft and the trade deadline, or not trade deadline, the free agency, like he did previously. I mean, there are definitely a lot of question marks, but there are also a lot of positives, given that we have a lot of speedy wingers. And the fact that Shea Weber and Carey Price were mostly absent during last season.
Yeah, I think, you know, if not after the draft, there's going to be a ton of activity at the draft. I was lucky enough to get to the one in 2016 in Buffalo, where they traded Subban for Weber shortly after that. But before that, they made two trades on the draft floor. During the first round, they traded Lars Eller to the Washington Capitals and acquired 2 seconds. And in the same breath, Gary Bettman announced that they traded 2 seconds to Chicago for Andrew Shaw. So, I mean, you know, Bergevin likes to make a lot of these moves like that. I wouldn't be surprised if he's working, you know, he's always working the phones. We always hear that he's one of the most active general managers in the league on the trade market. He's always you know, kicking tires everywhere around the league. So, I mean, I think the draft will be a heightened version of that. I think teams will try to shed some salary at the draft ahead of free agencies to try to go out and spend on guys like John Carlson and obviously John Tavares, who, you know, Montreal should be interested in. But I mean, the draft is just it's a powder keg for activity. You have all the general managers on the same floor. Everyone's just a phone call away. Even if that, you can walk up to somebody's table. Like I remember, you know, I was sitting next to my girlfriend at the draft, and we're trying to find Bergevin because he's not sitting at the table. And I look, and he's talking with Brian McClellan, who's the GM of Washington, and then he walks over and he's talking with Stan Bowman, Chicago. And then right after that, him and Bowman walked off of the surface, because they're just on the playing surface where the ice usually is. They walk out, you know, down the tunnel, which is where they keep NHL Central Registry, and they finalize the trade. You know, just a side note, if you can get to an NHL draft, you should. It's a lot of fun. There's lots of stuff to do around the arena during the draft. Around the draft, I got to, you know, see the Stanley Cup when I was there. But there's just so much activity. Everyone's in the same room. Bergevin's going to try to make some noise at the draft. He always tries to make noise. To believe otherwise, I think, is silly. So hold your breath and wait for the end of June. He's gonna get busy soon.
That's true. Like you mentioned, how all of the GMs are a phone call away or a walk away. When you're saying that, I was imagining that during the trade deadline. I think just that thought, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, a lot of people want to see that. I'm not sure. The NHL seems anti-fun a lot of the time. And I don't know where I stand on this because at the end of the day, trades are part of the game. I understand that. It's part of the business. But at the end of the day, I think it would sort of teeter on celebrating, players having their lives, uprooted, even if just momentarily, even if they were expiring contracts. You're still cheering and looking at these players to go somewhere else. It's kind of a weird look. I don't think the NHL would go for it, but from an entertainment standpoint, it sure would be a huge night. You freeze trades for the day before. No one can make any trades so that you get to the trade deadline and you can make all the trades all at once. So it would be interesting. I don't think it'll happen. But the idea has been floated around too often for it to be more than just a pipe dream at this point.
That's true. Thank you for joining the Have Some Fun podcast. I really appreciated you being the first guest to come on the pod.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. Anytime. I'd love to have you over on the Nosebleeds podcast. We'll try to work something out with that. And I hope more people listen to this. I hope you get to have some more guests on here.
And before we leave, where can people find you on social media?
Yep, you can follow me at Boisvert Ian, BoisVert Ian. I'm also the deputy editor of rabbithabs.com. So you can find me at rabbithabs on Twitter. You can find our content there. I know Rob, you can find Robert's stuff there. He's always submitting articles. So there as well. And at Nosebleeds Pod, our Nosebleeds Cast, my mistake, Nosebleeds Cast on Twitter for the podcast Twitter account.
Thank you, Ian, for being here, and hopefully we could chat soon.
All right, Robert. Take care, bud.
You too.